I'm David W. Berner, and this is The Writer Shed. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Writer Shed and the second installment of The School of Joyful Writing. If you're just coming to the podcast for the first time, we welcome you greatly. We know we're getting a lot more people who are coming to join us for this four-part series on the School of Joyful Writing. It is a four-part series that we've thought about a long time, and we've had some requests about this, and we've delved into these subjects off and on before, but this is a little more concentrated in terms of finding a place in your world for your writing, and a place for your writing in your world, if you want to put it that way. We are on to the second part here. If you've not listened to the very first installment, please do. You'll find that anywhere you find your podcast. This is part two of the School of Joyful Writing, and it's called The First Steps to Begin a Writing Practice. And what does that actually mean? So a lot of people come to me in workshops and will say, you know, how do you get a book done? How do you get a story finished? How do you find time? Well, it's part of the practice. It's a bigger sort of umbrella word, really, that involves not only some discipline on your part, but also some processes that are not just to, you know, keep stroking your back or patting yourself on the back for something you do well, but to get you to think about some of the things you might not do well and how to work on those. So I put it this way. So I play a fair amount of golf. I love golf. I love the game. It's sort of a really kind of a mindful game in a lot of ways. And I see guys on the driving range all the time, and I'm an average golfer. I'm not a great golfer at all, but we've got guys on the driving range who, you know, hit a really good drive with their driver, right? And all they do is hit the driver over and over and over because it feels good, because they can do it well. And they're hitting those long, beautiful drives. Well, the reality is they probably ought to be working on their putting or their chipping game. And you can relate this to any sport or any activity you take part in. We all gravitate to the things that we do well, and we do those over and over and over because they feel good. But the reality is if you want to get better at something, right, you've got to look at the things that you don't do so well, kind of recognize those, and find a way to work on those. And that's part of the practice too. But practice is also about discipline, as I mentioned. And what I mean by that is finding a reasonable way in your life to continue to write, to find a way to fit it into your life. And not only fit it in, but I want to say more, let it become a part of your life. Like, you know, brushing your teeth, like putting the dog out, you know, eating. I really mean that. I think writing has to be something that you can't get through your day without doing in some fashion. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you write every day, but you do write regularly, and I think that's important. You can't become good in writing in any shape or whatever that may mean to you if you write, you know, once a week and then you let a month or two go and you write a little bit more. That's just not going to work. So that's what this particular episode is about. It's called The First Steps to Begin a Writing Practice. In my hand, I have a book that I really love. It is not, you know, the greatest book of poetry I've ever read in my life, but I do love this book. It's called The Auguries of Innocence, Poems by Patti Smith. Now, you may know that name, not only for her writing, but also she was considered the great punk poet, right? Punk music poet. And she really is a very good writer. She's a very observant, poetic, thoughtful person. Really brilliant in a lot of ways in her writing. Of course, her book, Just Kids, was a National Book Award winner, and she is tremendous. If you've not read some of her other books, some of her more personal narratives, they're worth it. But her poems are, you know, they're really ethereal. And, you know, I am certainly not an expert on poetry, but I know what I like, and I know what hits me, and I know what strikes me, and I know what touches my heart. And that's part of it, too. And I bring this up because sometimes I look at poetry, not only because it feeds my soul somehow, but also because it feeds my writing. There's so much beautiful language in poetry, so much observational skill, that I really think it can help. And those are the kinds of things that I want to put into my writing as much as I can. So I practice reading poetry. I practice understanding it. I practice the craft of it. I write my own, but I also read a lot of poetry. Now, when I say I write my own, it doesn't mean it's good. It just means that I'm getting it out. And I'm understanding the heartfelt part of poetry, the part that is deep and meaningful. And you can read any book of poetry that you like. There's a lot of great poets, modern poets. There's a lot of great, you know, classic poets. I'm a Dylan Thomas fan. I'm a William Blake fan. But I also like Billy Collins. And I like Patti Smith. So that's one thing to think about. Find the thing that you think you need to fix, you need to work on, that part of your voice in writing that needs a little bit of a boost. And maybe it's like me, sometimes it needs that poetic push. And I find that by reading poetry, and that's part of my writing practice. So let me start with this part. For a couple of years, I edited a journal that was called From Writershed Press. And it was, we solicited many manuscripts and short stories, even some poems from people all over the world. And we got a lot of submissions. And I learned something through going through those submissions. I learned something about writers and the writing process and what people really want to get out of their writing. So I want to share that with you because I think it's also part of the practice. So the number one thing is there are a lot of very good writers, solid, capable, worthy writers with much to say. A lot of writers who never get published, a lot of writers who write and stick them in a drawer, write their stories and stick them in drawers and they're never seen again. There's a lot of really good people out there who don't know what to do with their words. That's the one thing I learned. The second thing is there are many, many poets who struggle to find places for their work. Poetry is a tough one. Tough way to get published a lot of times. And their recognition is deserved. Number three, many writers are finding homes for their work online. Online publications. There's a lot of good ones out there. And in small presses. And many of those publications are quite, quite good. And there's no reason to think that the only way that you can sort of stamp yourself as a writer is to get some contract from a big five publisher. That just is not reality. You're a writer if you're writing. I really believe that. If you're committed, you're a writer. Number four, some of these small publications that are out there are really not that good. Some are. Some are not good. Some are really good. And the work is not vetted very well. So when you do decide to feel as if you are ready to submit work, whenever you get to that part of your writing life, really look at those publications and see who's getting published and why. Number five, no one wants to pay writers. It's a horrible thing. This is especially an American thing. There are a lot of places in Europe that the arts are so valued that they're encouraged by the government, and even artists are paid by the government to write and to paint and to do all those things. America has a very different look on that. We're very commerce-based. Nobody wants to pay writers. Now, that doesn't say that writers aren't getting paid. They are, but it is not a place where you're going to make $1 million, unless you're Stephen King, right? It's just not, okay? So don't, as part of your practice, don't think that what you need to do is make money, because if you do that, you're on the wrong road. You're going to have a difficult time. Not to say that you can't make money. What I'm saying is that if that is your sole purpose, that is a fool's process, all right? And number six, there are a great number of international writers out there who want readers in America, people all over the world. I receive submissions from everywhere in the world, and I am not exaggerating. This is not hyperbole. And some of those submissions were quite good. But the biggest takeaway I had from reading those submissions is this. Making a decision on what is accepted into the publication or what submission is agreed upon is not a science. It is an art, and it's wrapped in an emotion. Choosing what will be published is a critiquing process that is a mix of relative objectivity and a vague degree of subjectivity, a kind of mystery. Most of all, I look for what leaves an impression. If I read an essay or a story, and I find myself thinking about it hours after reading it, there might be something worthy there, right? It doesn't matter the style or the genre. It doesn't matter if there's a typo or a grammatical gaffe. It doesn't matter if they break some of those rules. If it sticks with me, it's going to get another read. and it may be accepted for publication. Poetry is the same, but in verse, it usually comes from an interesting or beautiful word combination or a striking description. And again, the impression it leaves is important. What does the poem leave behind for me? If the impression is impossible to shake, it gets another read, and from me and others, it just might get the okay to get published. Now, I say this because I've read a lot of work, and I've read work from people who are just getting started, and I've read work from people who are accomplished, and it's the same process for me. It is absolutely the same. What I do not do is work with a point system or a rubric or anything like that. It comes from the heart, and I think that's true of just the average reader. When you want to read something, you want it to stick with you. You want it to hold onto your heart, to hang onto your soul. And that's your job as a writer, to do that, to come up with something that hangs onto someone's heart. Norman Mailer called writing the spooky art. He may have been onto something there that not only relates to the writer, but also to the reader and the editor. Now, I say all this to preface the plan, the idea of building a writing practice in all that that means. So considering that, I think there are three things to think about. You need a plan. And what I mean by that is you need to have an idea of, in your own real world, and you have to be honest with yourself, when am I going to find time to do this? And how much time am I going to devote? Because if you say, I'm going to write every day and I'm going to write 3 hours a day, and you don't do that, then you're going to feel bad about it and you're going to stop writing. I don't want you doing that. I'd rather you write 10 minutes in the morning, right, before anybody else gets up with a cup of coffee, and do that every day and find that to be your discipline. That's better than writing for 2 hours on a Tuesday and then not writing for another 2 weeks. In my estimation, that is much, much better. The idea of consistency is much more important than a number of words or the word count. Or whether you finish the book or not, or whether you finish the short story or not. It's really the work, the process, the journey that it takes. So have a plan in terms of what you truly believe you can accomplish without beating yourself up. Remember, this is supposed to be joyful, right? It's not supposed to be work. You don't want it to be work. You want to love it. You want to feel it in your soul and your heart, and you need a plan that fits your life. The second part of building a practice is to remember that brevity, clarity, and accuracy are the three biggest things in writing. There is nothing that is better than those three things. When you mix those together, you are on your way. Now, what I mean by accuracy is not in terms of journalistically, like it's factual, because maybe you're writing fiction, right? What I mean is that you're accurately portraying what you want to say in the best way you can, that you're clear about it, and that you're also that you use brevity. Now, what I mean by that is, if you can write a sentence that's a paragraph long and it's beautifully constructed, but you can write that better by writing it in maybe two sentences that are not full of commas and have a sense of succinctness to them, you're probably on a better path in the long run. That's not to say that you can't write a very long sentence. That's not my point at all. But simple, direct language many times gets us where we want to go. And I think that's a plan you need to keep in your head. So as you're writing, you're thinking about that. The third thing in the sort of building a practice, in my mind, is to have a philosophy of writing. Your whole duty as a writer is to please and to satisfy yourself. If you are writing to a marketplace, if you are writing to a particular reader all the time, not to say that you shouldn't think about the reader, but if you're doing that all the time, a sort of, marketing a product, you're going to lose the joy. If you somehow link onto the trend machine, if the vampire stories are a big deal right now and you say, I'm going to write a vampire story, there's some beauty in that if you really, really love vampire stories and you get joy out of it. But if you're doing it just to, jump on the back of that trend machine, I think you're making a very big mistake. So what is your philosophy of writing? What is it? What do you want to do with this? One of the things I do when I have a workshop with somebody, sometimes when I mentor a writer, my first question is, what do you hope to accomplish? Why are you doing this? What is it that you're doing it for? Are you doing it for fame? Are you doing it for money? Are you doing it because You have nothing better to do? What is it? What is it that you're trying to accomplish here? I think that is a very, very important question. So think about your philosophy of writing, what that may be. That's the process to practice. So lastly here, I want to talk about what is practice. What does that mean in terms of, you know, real life, in terms of actually doing work? Well, as I started the program today, I talked about golf and how, you know, if you hit that driver really, really long all the time and you're a really good driver, and all you do at the driving range when you're practicing is hit drivers, well, you're really not progressing here, right? Same thing with writing. Practice equals knowledge and repetition. And what I mean by the knowledge is knowledge that you know you need work on things, that you know you need to process and you need to understand, and maybe you need to read a lot more. How many times have you heard that? If you're going to be a good writer, you have to read. I am a firm believer of that. So knowledge, gaining knowledge about what you do well and what you don't do well and what you need to work on, and then repeating those things in a way that builds those skills for you. That's what's important. So have a plan. Think about brevity, clarity, and accuracy, and have a writing philosophy that fits your world and your life and what you're trying to accomplish here. That, to me, is the most important part of a practice in writing. And do it for the joy of it. Don't do it because you think you're going to make $1 million, because you won't. It just is the way it is. All right, I always end these podcasts in the School of Joyful Writing with a couple of exercises to think about. Now, I have to tell you, when I do workshops, when I build them on my own, I'm not a big fan of exercises, because I think what happens is that you're not really writing the actual work. I mean, it's almost like learning to paint by number rather than actually getting to the work. So I think sometimes those are misguided. That's my own philosophy. But what I mean by exercise in this particular project is things to do that can help you build this practice. This is what we're talking about today. Number one, you've heard it 100 times, but I can't tell how important it might be for you. If you're not keeping a journal, keep a journal. Now, again, it doesn't have to be written in every day, but it should be written in consistently. What I mean by keeping a journal is get yourself a nice little book that you like, something with a nice bunch of line pages in it. You think it's a beautiful piece that you can hang on to. Get a good pen and write a few words every day. Write a little poem. Write a haiku. Write a paragraph. Write 2 or 3 sentences that you just love. Write a piece of dialogue between 2 people that only lasts for, you know, 5, 6 lines. Anything. Write something in that journal on a consistent basis, because that will start to build this practice, this sort of knowledge to repetition, right? It will start to build that. The other thing to do in terms of practice is make sure you're reading. And as much as you're finding time to write, I want you to find time to read. And read things that are kind of out of your comfort zone. Maybe a book of poetry if you're not a poetry reader. Maybe a mystery if you're not a mystery reader. Maybe memoir if you've never read memoir before. And I don't mean memoir from celebrities, but I mean memoir in terms of the truest sense. Those two exercise practices will help you build a repetitive writing practice. And that means writing and reading. Find time to read and write. I don't know how many times I have heard writers who are beginning the process and really want to do good work and say, I don't have any time for reading. I'm sorry, you have to find some time for reading. Drop something else out of your life for a half an hour a day and read. Read something, not a story online, not the New York Times. Read a book, read a short story, read a poem. Build that practice, the practice of writing in a journal and the practice of reading as often as you can on a regular, consistent basis. If that's every day, then it's every day. As always, during this series, you can find those exercises I just spoke about on davidwberner.com, davidwberner.com, B-E-R-N-E-R. I always put the exercises there. These are pretty simple and not easily forgotten, right? But I'll put them there, as I usually do, as a process to help you maybe remind yourself a little bit. So that's found on the website. This has been another episode of The Writer Shed. I'm David W. Berner. Thanks for joining the School of Joyful Writing. This is part two. And in part three, we will look at what you want to write and how to find that out, how to discover what you want to be writing and what you're good at writing and what brings you joy. That's in part three of the School of Joyful Writing. You can find out more about Writer Shed at Writer Shed on Medium. You can also sign up there for our newsletter and find us at Writer Shed Press on Twitter. All the episodes of The Writer Shed are available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.